It's tremendous fun, is great for your health, leads to lasting friendships, and if you're lucky, ends in a pint and a sing-song. Gig rowing is enjoyed by hundreds across Cornwall and is spreading further up the coast as more and more people catch on to the camaraderie and benefits of the sport. You're listening to Newquay Sea Stories, a new podcast brought to you by Newquay Heritage Archive and Museum, packed with riveting and revealing stories about the town and its historic connections with seafaring and surfing. In this episode, we'll find out about the history of gig rowing, the pioneering role of determined women rowers, and how almost anyone can have a go. Centuries ago, pilot gigs had a number of professional uses, and not all of them were legal. Claire Tripp led the Pulling Together the Past project, which has documented the rich history of gig rowing in Cornwall, and she now works with the Cornish Pilot Gig Association.
Quite a few of the early references are around life saving, so they're around lifeboats and they're around rescues. And then we have the stories of pilotage, so rowing out to bring in the pilots, and that's obviously where you get the story of the racing out and the boat, the fastest boat winning the contract. And then you have stories of the working boats and salvaging. On the Isles of Scilly, you have stories of boats being used to get doctors to off islands in difficult conditions, or maybe even being used to transport cargoes like flowers or even coffins. And I think as well, you know, there are stories in the history that have come out about, you know, cricket teams using the gigs to get to matches on off islands, or using them for smuggling, not necessarily a job or career that somebody would admit to in front of the authorities.
This year, Newquay Rowing Club, the home of the Cornish Pilot Gig, celebrates its 100th anniversary. I went to meet one of its most respected veterans. So I'm now sitting on the balcony of Newquay Rowing Club, looking out across the harbour with John Borden. You're a very key figure here, aren't you?
Well, we've done most of the officers in the club. I started in 1953 rowing, then I was on the committee and worked my way up. I was chairman for quite a number of years, and then commodore at the moment. I'm president of the club and also chairman of the gig trustees.
Top dog. We're looking out across the harbour. It's very busy today, lots of surfing going along. This was really your playground when you were a boy. What was it like then?
Well, it was a lot different than what it was. So you knew everybody, and most of them were locals. A few visitors then, but your playground was, let's say, in the harbour, rowing boats and sculling boats. And unfortunately, I never learnt to swim.
You were 15 when you first started rowing?
That's correct, yeah.
That was back in 1953, is that right?
Yes. It comes natural. It's learning what to do and where to put your feet and how to catch all the paddle and how to operate the oar and feather your paddle and different things like that.
What does that mean?
To feather it is, as you're going on, if you've got a headwind, you just turn the blade so the edge of the blade is against the wind, so you haven't got any resistance. Then you turn it upright before you hit the water and take another stroke, and you carry on like that. Because if you've got a headwind and your paddle's flat, with six people rowing, that's a hell of a lot of windage against the paddle.
How did gig rowing develop into a sport? You know, this started back in Victorian times, didn't it? Originally?
Oh yes, right back in the late 1700s, early 1800s, they had gig racing. They weren't clubs as such, but each port had a different gig and they'd go around, and they used to race back then for like so many sovereigns, a race for the winners, and people from every walk of life compete, and they would have more than a day's race than they had for weeks or months probably back then. And you used to go all over Cornwall.
So you've brought lots of documents with you, John, and here are some newspaper cuttings from 1896 and 1909 of some of the regattas that were held in Newquay then. Newquay Regatta, 1858, first prize, £7. Second prize, £3, third prize, £1. Wow. And here you've got some lyrics of a song. Somebody written a song. Especially.
It's written for the Rowing Club, a chap called Brian Bennett. He was a member of the club. He wrote a song about the gigs.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember the tune?
Yes. A mixture of no swearing and that bit, yeah. Right. Nuki dove and to fry, red and white and blue as the sky. I love you too, row until the day I die. Heave ho, and the gigs will go. May not be exactly in tune, but that's something like it.
I get the picture.
During the 19th century, many Cornish women worked on the ferries, rowing people and goods across the creeks and rivers of the county. Their strength and knowledge made them ideally suited to gig rowing. Claire Tripp has looked into the life of one of the most famous of those, Anne Glanville.
So she was born in 1790. She had, I think, 14 children. And the story goes that her husband became unwell and she ended up having to take over the sort of the ferry that their family ran, the rowing ferry across the Tamar. Well, the story goes she saw a poster for Plymouth Regatta and I think the prize money was like £1 or something, which was a lot of money then. So she sort of rallied some of the other watermen and put a crew out in a four-oar and they won. And that was it then. I think she realised she could make money. After that, she starts challenging male crews. So, you know, maybe rowing alongside boats with male sailors and challenging them to a race, and then people would put money on it and there would be a bet. And of course they were, you know, oarswomen. That's what they did for their work, so they managed to take quite a lot of money off men, I think, over the time. So there's a captain that then takes her on a tour of the UK essentially up to Hull, and people would pay to come and see her stood in a hall with her crew in their rowing gear, and then there'd be this sort of challenge on the water and people would come out to see and place bets and they would essentially clean up, I think. I just think she's a fascinating character. She's supposed to have known royalty and, you know, had this great network of supporters, and I think about her when I see those top crews today racing, the amount of commitment, the amount of training, and she was doing that then. It's fascinating to learn about it.
Fast forward to the 1970s, and you'd expect to see as many women crews as men on the water. Well, you'd be wrong. It took a number of particularly determined young Newquay women to challenge the male-dominated sport. Former coxswain and club stalwart Annabel Bennetts and veteran rower Jill King were among the trailblazers. I met them both in Annabel's home, overlooking Newquay Harbour. Jill told me she'd been rowing since childhood.
Part of my growing up with my brother and my sister, we were part of the ferry business. Dad would send us off even at about the age of 10 with a rowing boat full of people to take across. And we'd learnt how to gauge the tide. So it was part and parcel of my life.
So you were rowing passengers at the age of 10?
Yeah.
Just yourself?
Yes.
That's amazing. It's obviously much more to do than just physical strength.
Yes. It's like Annabel will know when you're rowing in a gig. Once everybody has got timing together and you've got that boat moving, it will keep moving. And then if you stop, then the momentum stops and then it becomes like a dead weight.
So if we go back to the early 1970s, gig rowing was a really big thing here in Newquay. The club was very well established, but there was one very important thing that was missing. The ladies. You were bystanders, you were watching, but absolutely desperate to get involved.
It was very much the men, the fishermen, was it painters and carpenters, but I think we knew that on the Isles of Scilly, some of the girls' wives, girlfriends were rowing, and we wanted to have a go, but we were never allowed
no
women in the gigs.
No. I'd luck having a woman on the water. Yeah.
Do you think that was part of it?
I think so. Yeah. Women's place was home.
I think they were quite glad that the women came down to support their rowing.
But we wanted to have a go. We were all going out with local fishermen or married to them. Or
yes.
It was just natural that we wanted to do what they were doing. And they used to talk about it and how great it was and this and the other. And we found out for ourselves. But my goodness, we had to go through the mill to find out, didn't we?
Yes.
How did you get your own way in the end?
We all knew how to row.
And I'd never done any rowing.
No.
At all, really, other than the boating lake.
Yeah.
So I was a novice.
I think your mum was a bit horrified that you were going rowing,
no,
whereas my mum...
She wanted me to be a ballet dancer. I was never born for a bloody ballet dancer. So.
The boat that you were allowed to use was the slip-in.
Yes.
But it was very heavy.
Yeah. Extremely. Yeah, and we had no wheels then. We had to lift it. And the men would sit there like that and watch us struggling down the quay
yeah.
with it, wouldn't
if
they?
If you want to use it...
You lift it
you
yourself.
Lift it.
You've got what you want.
Yeah.
So two steps and put it down, two steps and put it, because it was awfully heavy. Mm. There was only six women, and we had one, obviously, male coxswain, Chaz, I think. And then Spider came along, and Spider took us on, and it was wonderful, because we actually had somebody who would take us out.
And you turned out to be rather good.
More than that, we were turned out to be wonderful. We did. Nobody could beat us. Nobody could touch us in the early years. We used to have to slow down halfway around and let people catch up.
And what is it about being out on the water in a close team? Must be.
It's wonderful.
I mean, when we started, there weren't mobile phones or anything.
No.
You got in the gig, and once you'd gone out there, there was nobody to get to
you.
Nobody
could get you, no.
We were in the middle of the boat, and that was always classed as the engine room. And then my dad again and his sister, my auntie Molly, they put a shield up, a firm pit shield, for the girls to row for, and that's still being rowed for now.
Ladies championships,
yeah.
We were unbeatable really in the championships. Not every race we went in.
No.
How many times did you win the championships?
I think my name, was I on there 9 times?
I think I'm on a bit more because I'm on
you're on
the
coxswain
as
well.
Amazing. So you had a really good run from what, mid-70s through to mid-80s?
Yeah. By chance, they suddenly were going to have a world championship in Scilly. And
it's 1990.
Yeah. A piece of paper went up on the notice board down the club. And we went over there and it was a big race at the time. I think it was 18 gigs, whereas now it's, what, 100 and odd,
isn't it?
Yeah, 160, is it now?
Wow. So from being somebody with no particular rowing experience to start with, then you went on to become coxswain.
Yeah, but that was a long time after. That was, what, 15 or 20 years after?
Oh, gosh, yes.
I had to fight for that.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
because Newquay would not have a female coxswain. But, you know, the rest of the county was slowly adopting female coxswains. And we had the championships here, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And they told all the other clubs they weren't allowed to have a female coxswain just because I wanted to be a Newquay and they wouldn't let me.
Mm-hmm.
So they stopped everybody. Nobody that year was allowed to be coxswain by a female. So I wrote to the trustees and I said, you all know me, a Newquay girl. I've been rowing 20 years in the gigs. And I know jolly well I can coxswain. So, okay, you can do it, but you start off with novices and children. Now, you imagine the worst rowers you can possibly get is the novices and the children. And I remember that first time I'd taken there. Oh, my God. It was a nightmare. It got better. It got wonderful. I loved it. And when you got a good crew, oh, the feeling in it, you know you're going to do well when you used to feel our crew. It was...
Mm.
Super.
So tell me about the social life, because I believe the rowing and the going to the pub sort of hand in hand.
Yeah, we would say, oh, we'll just have a drink before we go home.
How are you getting home?
Some time later.
Yes. So we used to have a raucous time. Spider says he still says that we've got the fastest time in Sillies from was it Nut Rock Home or something?
Yeah.
Still got that record.
Oh, really?
Training on Bacardi and fish and chips.
As well as encouraging his daughter into the sport, Jill King's father, George Northey, played his own significant part in the club's history.
It was in the very early 50s, and he and three others went to the Isles of Scilly. Newquay had the Newquay Dub and the Trefry here, and they'd revived gig rowing in Newquay Bay, and then they knew of the gigs over on the Isles of Scilly, which weren't being used. I think at one time some of them were being used as chicken houses and things like that. And they brought over, managed to bring over the Bonnet, the Golden Eagle, the Shah, and the Slippin, yeah. And they started to use them for Newquay and rowing. And yeah, that was, as I say, back in the 50s.
Many of those boats are still in use by the Newquay rowers. Former club commodore John Borden took me down to the club's boat shed to have a look.
Wow. So here we are in the room where all the gigs are stored. So what are the names of these boats?
We start with the oldest. You've got the Newquay, which was built in 1812.
1812?
Yeah. As far as we know, that's the oldest rowing boat in the world still being used competitively.
That's amazing.
And most of the planking, there's a few new planks, but most of them are original planks.
Wow.
And then the Dove 1820.
She's a famous one, isn't she?
She's still good.
Yeah.
That's the one that's 200 years old, or last year. And the Geoffroy, which is 1838, that's the one that all the new boats are built off. So every new gig that's built is more or less identical to Geoffroy.
Tell me what it is that's distinctive about this one that's been the template for all the boats built.
Mainly the reason she's 32 foot long, whereas years ago the Dove, she's 30 and the Newquay's about 28. The Dove is fine weather and the Newquay is a bit of everything. But the Geoffroy is a very good boat in the sea. That's why we picked that as a model for all the new gigs.
And have you had any hairy moments in any of these?
One or two.
Yeah.
I've been out in the Dove before and half filled with water, so you've got to start bailing out then.
Yeah. And do you miss it?
Yeah. I go out now and again just for a paddle around, but I miss racing.
Yeah.
The older you get, the worse it gets. Luckily, all the young rowers coming on will revive it and keep it going for another 100 or 200 years, hopefully.
At one of the Newquay Club's social rowing events, I met one of the current generation, who also happens to be the daughter-in-law of the veteran lady rower Jill King.
So my name is Jules King. I've been a member of Newquay Rowing Club probably for about 15 or 16 years now, if not longer. I'm a teacher at Newquay Tretherras, which is the local secondary school. I'm head of geography there. And I used to row as a junior rower for Porthleven growing up.
So what's going on here tonight?
So tonight we have what's called a welly night, which is a social night. It's been going for several decades now, and it's a fortnightly race that's held on a Friday night in the rowing club, where teams of friends race off against each other. It's just a good opportunity to get people who don't necessarily want to be competitive rowers rowing on the Cornwall-wide circuit to row together socially and have a few drinks afterwards.
Obviously the last year's been somewhat different, but what does an average year look like? How does the season work for gig rowing?
So if you are part of a competitive crew rowing for the Isles of Scilly, actually the gig rowing doesn't stop, perhaps just less of it over the winter. So we winter train from October, which is the end of the official season, all the way through to May, ready for the World Championships on the Isles of Scilly. And then as the season progresses and the light gets more in the evenings, you might be rowing two or three times, once at the weekend, a couple of times in the week. But the actual event season starts probably around March with the first event of the year, which is the Three Rivers race held up at Saltash, rowing on the Tamar. And then from mid-May onwards, the season really starts with probably an away race every week of the summer.
And you're a teacher. I understand that the history of rowing in the harbour is on the local curriculum.
Yeah, so a lot of the primary schools have got involved with gig rowing, and we've had some taster events where primary pupils have come down to learn about the history of the gigs and to actually have a go at gig rowing. But it's really important to get local history and local sport onto our curriculum. Also, gig rowing is part of the Cornwall School Games.
So I've done an interview with your mother-in-law, Jill, for this podcast. It strikes me that gig rowing is very much, as well as a community thing, a big family thing as well. It must really help to bring people together and bring families together as
definitely.
Well.
Definitely. So my mother-in-law, yeah, she's been rowing since she was a child, and her sons, my husband being her oldest son, they obviously got into rowing very young, and now grandchildren are coming on rowing as well. So a lot of the families that come down here and row see generation after generation getting involved in the gig rowing as well.
One of the big events coming up this year for Newquay is that you're marking your centenary. What's involved for that? What are you looking forward to?
So one of the things we're doing with centenary is we've got a ladies crew, of which I'm involved in as well, rowing from Senen to the Isles of Scilly. We're going to be the first all-female crew from Newquay Rowing Club to do that. So it's 27 miles from Senen to the Isles of Scilly, and we're having seven rowers, no coxswain, and we'll all be taking in turns to coxswain along the way. So that's part of our centenary celebrations, to raise some money for Cornwall Air Ambulance and the Island Haven, which is a new charity that's been set up by the Isles of Scilly. And both of those charities have strong connections with Newquay and with the islands themselves. So we wanted to keep the connection going, because gig rowing and from Newquay and the Isles of Scilly, we go back many years in terms of our friendship.
And it's not the easiest stretch of water, that, is it?
No, lots of tides and different factors to take into consideration.
Thank you very much, and good luck for this evening and for the Scilly's race.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Nice one, Tags.
Like Jules King, gig rowing is a family affair for many other rowers. Wayne Rowe is the current vice chair of Newquay Rowing Club. His father and his teenage son Luke are both keen rowers, and it won't be long before his young daughter is out there too.
My name's Wayne Rowe, but I'm more known as Mouse down at the harbour, being a harbour rat. We all end up with nicknames from the beginning, really. I've been rowing in the rowing club since 1990 as a junior, under 16s, and then moved on and done a little bit of adult rowing before I started coxswaining, mainly because of my size. They used to say I was 10 stone soaking wet, and being a boatman, I had a bit of knowledge of the sea, and I've coxswained then since about 1997.
And what is the role of the coxswain?
The role of the coxswain is really obviously a bit of seamanship and steering the boat, along with motivating the crew, being the crew's eyes. Obviously they got their back to what's coming, so you're telling them where, what's around them with other boats, because obviously they row port and starboard side, so half the crew can see one side of the boat, what's going on, and half the crew can see the other side of the boat, whereas there's a coxswain, you can see both sides and what's ahead. So you can communicate to your crew where the other gigs are around them, whether you need a little bit of a half a dozen strokes, a little bit of a spurt, just to give you that edge, you can maybe help them a little bit in the way you steer the boat around the marks or through the other gigs.
And to the uninitiated, how would you describe how the sport works?
The sport is probably a small sport that covers so many ages. You can go from, like here tonight, we've probably got rowers out there from 14 years old up to probably our oldest rower tonight's probably in his 60s. But they're all sat in a boat together or alongside each other competing. Obviously, when you go to the higher levels, you know, your peak rowing age is probably 18 to 35, which is in any professional sport, really. You can put any ages together. You even do mixed crews, so you can put males and females together. And that's probably the biggest good thing about gig rowing.
And what makes a good gig?
Good gig is the builder and the weight of the boat. You know, if she's been kept dry, because obviously wood will soak up water. So obviously if she's been used a lot during the season, she'll be heavier than ones that haven't. But then on the other hand, you don't want it too dry, because wood's a natural material, the timber will open up and then the gig will leak more, and then you'll make more water on the way round.
Do you know how many clubs there are in Cornwall?
Pretty much every cove, inlet, estuary, anywhere where you can launch a boat in Cornwall has pretty much got a gig club. In Cornwall, it's pretty much at saturation point. Newquay is the home of gig rowing from 1921, the newer generation of gigs being built. Which is where the sport's got today. Probably, I would say, from Ralph Bird building the Energy in 1987 down at Falmouth College, Truro, and then Cadgwith. Obviously, Newquay and Cadgwith has got a big bond through the fishing community, where one of the local fishermen from Newquay went down and bought a boat from Cadgwiff. So you had those three original clubs, and then when other people seen how much fun and enjoyment we was having with the rowing and the socialising. The socialising is a big thing of it. The drinking and the singing, it goes hand in hand with gig rowing. From like the late 80s, it's just exploded throughout the county.
So at the moment, the women's crews are out on the water competing against each other. You're going out soon with the men's crews competing. How competitive are you within the club? How does that work?
I mean, there's always rivalry on the water, but there's always friendship on the shore.
What are your, have you got any sort of highlights, favourite moments over the years of rowing?
I think probably my biggest highlight is the 50th anniversary of the Newquay to Sillies racing, where we visit the Sillies at the end of September, the end of season racing, and that was the 50th anniversary from when the Newquay men went over and brought the gigs back from Sillies. We took the three old boats over and then we raced on the water, and then I had the privilege of having our top crew in our best boat, the Trefry. And unfortunately it was cancelled on the Saturday night due to fog. And then on the Sunday, it was still foggy, but there's no way when the trustees have given us permission to take the boats over for the first time ever together, there's no way we weren't going to race. And we raced in the fog alongside the Salonian crew, and we literally were neck and neck all the way, stroke for stroke. We had a passenger boat alongside us, which is obviously guiding us with his radar. And the first sight I saw was the cow and a calf off St Agnes. And that first sight, and luckily we were sort of north side of the Sillies crew, and as we turned up to come around the cow and the calf, it gave my crew a chance to see the Salonians. And when they could see them, they dropped them and they went half length up. And then from that point, there was no way the Salonians were gonna come back. The heart and the passion that the boys had in front of me was just immense. And probably my biggest win. I've won, I don't know, quite a few silver gigs, quite a lot of Atkinsons, but that one was a special one. There was only one race, the 50th anniversary race, with all the Salonian old boats and all the Newquay old boats. That's going to take some beating for me. And it's massive. Salonians and Cadgwiff, they're like friends you've known all your life. You know, you go there a couple of times a year, you go Cadgwiff, they come up here racing for the Buller Trophy, we go down there for their Buller Day. And then we meet up in Sillies, whether it be for the World Championships or Newquay Weekend. And it's like your friends you've had, lifelong friends.
And how does competition work between clubs? Is there a league?
A lot of it is regattas. Different clubs will hold regatta days where visiting clubs come to them and they race against each other. You've got the county championships held in Newquay at the end of the season, which is in September. Then people sort of hang their paddles up for a week or two, and then start training through the winter, land training like in the gyms, and a bit of water training when the weather permits. And then they sort of, the World Championships in Sillies is probably the other event that people aim to win, really. It's a bit of a like notch in your head post, if you like, to win a World Championships or a County Championships.
It's early days yet, but could Wayne's son Luke be a championship winner? I spoke to him once he was back on shore after his welly race.
I started rowing when I was 11, I think, and I'm now 14. My dad does it, my granddad, he did it.
Can you remember the first time you went out?
I was a bit nervous, really, but excited. And I think being excited, it like gave me the energy to pull a bit harder. Like.
And what are your ambitions? Do you plan to keep going?
Yeah, I want to become a coxswain, like my dad does.
Gig rowing is certainly a sport for all, as Claire Tripp explained.
Yeah, there are a range of junior categories. I think the youngest category at the moment is under 14s. And then there are junior age groups up through. And then adults-wise, it's just quite interesting. We've been looking into some of the sports participation figures in the UK, and we, as a sport, have a lot more women participating than, say, the average figures. In fact, there are more women than men.
Really?
On the gender split there in terms of participation. It really does appeal to women. And also we have the sort of the age demographic is tilted towards the older participators. So, again, we have a much more engagement with sort of the over 50s than the standard or average sport participation numbers for the UK.
That's great, because so many sports, you really do think of them as being
skew towards younger men.
Yeah, not so much at all with gig rowing. And I think one of the joys of it and sort of reasons for a success is that it is so accessible. You know, we've got adaptive vessels where people with disabilities can get in and row. You know, we've got all sorts of age groups getting in and just having a go. They're really stable, and everyone can just jump in and make a boat move. It's fantastic.
And why do you think it is so appealing to women compared to some other sports?
Oh, well, I could say something controversial there. I think because I think there's something about that working together that does appeal to women. You know, it's not the kind of sport where you can get in and be the fastest. You have to do it together. It's a non-contact sport. That might be another reason.
Last year, you were involved in a massive research project into the history of gig rowing. Can you tell me a bit about it and some of the interesting things that you discovered?
Over the 18 months of the project, we managed to gather over 37,000 items of heritage relating to gigs. You know, that's everything from postcards and photographs to audio items and films to programs for regattas and t-shirts and hats. And so the idea with the project really was to create a digital archive. So lots of the things that people gave us, we simply copied. Some people gave us content that has now sort of found its way into a physical archive that we'll be able to deposit in Cres and Curnay for the public to access.
You did lots of interviews with all sorts of people, didn't you? Where can people find those if they want to watch the films and listen to the recordings?
Yes, you can find those on cornishmemory.com, but you can also see a lot of the photographic archive, the film archive, and shortly, hopefully, some of the documentary archive will be on there too.
If anybody's listening to this and thinking about getting into gig rowing themselves, what would you say to encourage them?
I would say that it's really accessible and that there are so many places now around the coast where you can literally turn up, watch, have a go. Loads of clubs have novice sessions where you can just get in a boat with other people who are beginners and sit in the boat, and the boat will go. That's the joy of the vessel. It's so stable and easy to row. So I'm not saying it will be without challenges, and you might end up with some blisters, but I think the greatest danger is you might get addicted to it and end up wanting to do it all the time. That's what happened to me.
Is it something that's stabilised in terms of popularity? Is it getting more popular?
I think it's extraordinary, really, when you look back to the 1950s and you think about that small number of gigs that were maybe laid up on beaches, either falling apart or in sheds, not really being used very often, to see, you know, over 200 gigs regularly on the water around the coast of Britain. It's just incredible to me. And that growth does feel a bit exponential at the minute. It is such a fast growing sport. I think we've probably got about 8,000 rowers now, and the clubs are, you know, growing thick and fast. So I think this year we had another 6 join. So yeah, it's growing like Topsy.
Preparations for marking the centenary of Newquay Rowing Club are underway. I asked John Borden how he felt being part of it for more than half of that time.
Oh, lucky we're still here. No, it's nice to see these things. And this year, or it's supposed to have been last year, the Dove was 200 years old. But she was built in 1820. By Peters of St Mawes again, same as the rest. We celebrate that then.
Perhaps the celebrations will lead to some of the singing that was so much a part of the social scene over the years. Take it away, John.
Come fill up your glasses and let us be merry. For to rob and to plunder it is our intent. As we roam through the valley, where the lilies and the roses and the beauty of Kashmir lay drooping his head. Then away, then away, to those caves in yonder mountain where the robbers retreat.
That's enough.
Lovely.
If you want to find out more about the history of gig rowing in Cornwall, go to cornishmemory.com and you'll find more under Collections. And Newquay Heritage Archive and Museum has many artefacts and lots more information about the sport. This podcast was produced and presented by me, Karen Peary. To hear forthcoming episodes of Newquay Sea Stories, subscribe wherever you're listening to this now. This podcast is funded by Bright Sparks, a Feast and Cornwall Museums Partnership joint fund. The music is by Penwith band Douglas.